I just had two sets of wheels with snow tires on one set of wheels and regular summer tires on the other set. Okay. And I would just change them myself. Nowadays, the little sensor in the wheel that tells the car whether there's air in the tire or not are pretty expensive all by themselves. And so buying a new set of wheels is cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. So I take them in and have them changed every spring and fall. And today is my lucky day. I'll be driving on snow tires when I leave.
I changed out the screens for the storm windows yesterday.
Oh, good for you. Yeah.
Trying to get a few of those things done. I've been meaning to do it for a while. Clean up the deck and take off the cushions and do all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yesterday
sweep
was that
all
kind
the
of
pine
a day.
Needles.
You know, when you're staring a winter storm in the face, you can quickly ascertain what is it in your yard that you'd rather not have covered in snow. And yesterday was one of those days where, yeah, we were doing the same thing at our house. Well, these can all get put away for the winter and those can stay and that needs to be coiled up and we should put that somewhere. And
yep.
I've got to clean out a spot now so I can get my car in the garage.
we did that as well.
Yeah, all of those projects.
Yep.
Programming on KAXE is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funding is available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach Minnesota's diverse arts, culture, and heritage, including Indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, and recent immigrants and veterans. Details at mnhum.org/grants.
We want to hear from you this morning. It is the week of Thanksgiving, and we are grateful for you. We want to hear what you are grateful for. And today, we want to hear what you're grateful for in nature. We're hearing it in all these student reports. There's been some great language already. You pulled out gracefully. The first report that we got, I was loving. I was circling some of the words, swooping.
Yeah.
The swooping owl hit a student's car.
Yeah.
The animals are looking fluffier, and daylight is waning.
Yeah. good. It's fun.
Yeah.
And when I talk to the classes, I try to encourage them to be picturesque. I tell them you're painting a picture for people who are listening. Mm-hmm. So your words have to paint the picture. And I think they're doing that.
They are.
Yeah.
Nice job, John.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. Teams from Minnesota are assisting in a search for a missing man near the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. The St. Louis County Sheriff's Office says it was contacted by the Ontario Provincial Police to assist in a search of Lake Lac La Croix near the U.S.-Canadian border. Canadian authorities are on the lookout for 47-year-old Peter Buckle, who is last known to be using his cabin on the Canadian side of the lake. Searches by Canadian authorities located Buckle's boat and a campsite on an island in U.S. waters after checking his empty cabin. St. Louis County Sheriff's Office and Rescue Squad assisted with air, water, and land searches over the weekend, but as of Monday afternoon, Buckle had still not been located. The Grand Rapids Area Library will be open 3 days a week next year after budget cuts forced a significant reduction in staff time. Megan Buffington has the story.
Patrons can visit the library Monday through Wednesday from 10:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. starting in the new year. That's 15 fewer hours than the current schedule. The city of Grand Rapids has long funded the majority of the library's budget, but it says it can't sustain that level of funding and needs to make cuts amid rising costs. The city asked Itasca County to increase its funding to help offset the impact of the cuts, but the county board said no. Library Director Amy Detmer says she worked with staff to come up with the new hours.
We're the experts here. You know, we've been working with the public for many years, and we feel it's the best fit.
It was especially important to be open Mondays, as that's when the most books are returned and when most people need in-person assistance, like help with the printers or passport services. Despite popular demand, they opted not to be open on Saturdays because Arrowhead Library System and city services are only available on weekdays. City Councilor Molly McGregor is leading a fundraising effort to offset the library cuts for 2027. The goal is to raise $300,000 by September, when the city's budget discussions begin. In the first week, they raised about $1,000.
So we only have $299,000 to go. Really, I just wanted people to put their money where their mouth is. Everybody was saying, well, raise our taxes. And that's a very complicated and involved task.
Donations can be directed to the Grand Rapids Area Community Foundation's new unrestricted library fund. The city and county budgets aren't finalized until they host their truth and taxation meetings in December. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
The first snowstorm of the season is predicted to fall on the Northland on key Thanksgiving travel days. The weather system will move west to east, with snow predicted to begin falling on Minnesota Tuesday morning. Heavy snow rates over a 2 to 5 hour period Tuesday could reduce visibility to less than half a mile in northeastern North Dakota and northwestern Minnesota. Northerly winds of 25 to 30 miles an hour combined with moderate to heavy snow rates will likely lead to blowing snow. As the weather system moves east, the Duluth Weather Office predicts the lake effect will extend snow impacts into Wednesday and Thursday. After the snow moves on, a spokesperson for the Duluth office says temperatures will plummet.
We're looking at high temperatures only in the 20s with lows in the teens to single digits. And this much colder air mass is going to, moves in on Wednesday and then lingers through at least next weekend.
About 3 to 6 inches of snow is expected to fall over much of the state, and amounts exceeding a foot of snow are possible on the North Shore. The United Way of Bemidji area is coordinating 2 toy drives to spread holiday cheer this season. Registration for the Bemidji Toy Drive is due by December 4th, and toy donations will be accepted through December 8th, the distribution day where families can select toys for children from infants through teens already registered, is slated for December 11th at the Sanford Event Center. While Bemidji's toy distribution is open to families living in Beltrami, Clearwater, or Hubbard counties, the United Way of Bemidji area is also coordinating a toy drive for the LaPorte community. More information on how to donate or how to register is available at KAXE.org. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we'll have more news coming from Morning Edition. This is People Powered KAXE. We've got a story from Netta Ulubi about the Blue Box, the Jiffy Thanksgiving Muffins.
The corn muffins, Jiffy.
Yeah, family-owned business for 75 years. So stay tuned for that story. We're also going to tell you about some of the free Thanksgiving meals around our region, and we'll bring you more student nature reports. We want to hear from you this morning. What are you grateful for in nature? Text us 218-326-1234.
We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing mental health care in Minnesota. November is National Adoption Awareness Month, highlighting the need for adoptive and foster care families. North Homes provides licensing and case management for those opening their heart and home. More information is available at northhomes.org. And support for KAXE comes from UPM Blend and Paper, a provider of renewable material solutions with a focus on sustainability and innovation. Additional information is available at upm.com.
We're going to be talking with Tornado Bob in about an hour, and he will tell us his thoughts on the winter storm watch or warning that's in effect that started today. It goes until noon on Wednesday. We're expecting snow to be moving in, possibly mixed with rain. Highs today, 33 to 37. Sounds like the wind's going to be the big deal. Breezy northeast winds could be up to 30, and that is tonight as well, where they're using the word blustery from the forecast.
Blustery's okay.
Yeah.
The warnings will get more dire as we move deeper into winter.
Yeah.
Bone chilling cold. I don't even keep track. And of course, my favorite winter pastime is.
Gee, is it wind chill?
It is wind chill, yes.
Windshields? We love windshields.
Yeah, I love windshield. Absolutely. Yeah. Just remember that no matter what the wind chill is, whatever the actual temperature is as cold as it's going to get. So if the wind if the temperature is -5 and the wind chill is -40, it's still only going to get to -5. It's well, you know, it gives us something to brag about.
It does, yeah. We're into the bragging weather season. That
yes, we are. It's funny, but all through the summer, I have these temperature sondes that send me temperature readings every 30 seconds updated, and I don't pay any attention to them. But when winter comes, I start looking pretty carefully. Mm-hmm. How cold is it?
Yeah.
Support for KEXE comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
Before we learn about the Jiffy Muffin Company, we're going to take a listen to our album of the week. It's Vendrán Suaves Lluvias by Silvana Estrada, a Mexican singer-songwriter releasing her second album. Her debut was in 2022, where she won the Best New Artist at the Latin Grammys. Let's take a listen.
Si te quedas, dime si es de veras esta vez. Dime qué vamos a hacer ahora, falsos simulacros en la piel. ¿Cuál era la idea de aventarte sin dejarte caer? ¿Qué manera tan desoladora de querer?
Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Generations of Thanksgiving cooks have saved time in the kitchen with a familiar pantry staple.
Every year I make my mom's cornbread dressing. Two boxes of Jiffy Mix, and then when it's cooked, crumble it up, half a bag of...
That's a TikTok influencer talking about her holiday recipe using Jiffy Corn Muffin Mix. The company says it's one of the top-selling dry goods items in the United States, and the reason is right there in the name. NPR's Netta Ulaby went to Jiffy headquarters.
The company that makes Jiffy Corn Muffin Mix has run this mill since 1901 in Southeast Michigan. It also makes Jiffy Cake Mix, Jiffy Pie Crust, brownies.
So we have buttermilk biscuit running here, firing off the line at about 75, 80 boxes a minute.
Howard S. Holmes II. He runs the Chelsea Milling Company, best known for Jiffy Mix.
You see the mix packages being pushed into those chutes, and then it gets sealed, weighed, layers of food safety, metal detected.
This company has been owned by his family for five generations.
The flour milling business was created by Harmon S. Holmes.
His great-great-grandfather.
And then there's Howard Samuel Holmes, and then Howard Sumner Holmes.
His grandfather. His dad is also Howard Holmes, and so is his baby boy. But great-grandmother Mabel invented Jiffy Cornbread Mix during the Great Depression. Jiffy Mix cost 10 cents a box back then. Right now, 50 cents at Walmart. That old-fashioned package, says Holmes, sells itself.
Historically, we've never had a marketing department. We've never had an advertising department. You'll never see a print ad for Jiffy Mix. You've never seen a commercial on TV for Jiffy Mix. And as far as I'm concerned, you won't.
What you will see are paid partnerships on social media, a new thing for the company.
Now listen here. I like to make cornbread homemade just like anybody else. But if the Jiffy Mix is on sale at the peak for 50 cents a box, you know I'm gonna take the shortcut.
So many people show off their Jiffy hacks online, like influencer Sarah Opai. It can be hard to tell which posts are sponsored. Food studies professor Amy Bentley teaches at New York University. As a kid, she loved making Jiffy cornbread mix, but says she would be reluctant to make it now.
The sodium level is super high. A third of your daily allotment for a portion of cornbread or a corn muffin, that's ridiculous.
But in spite of the sodium and the preservatives, Bentley says it's better than many fast food alternatives.
You don't want to lose these mixes like this because they are cooking for a lot of people, and we want people to cook.
Especially at Thanksgiving. It's the busiest time of year for the company, says Howard Holmes, which sells about 200 million boxes of various mixes a year. It keeps costs so low, he says, because it's family-run. No private equity, no shareholders. And everything is made here in Michigan, even those blue and white boxes that seem so unchanged. Although there have been updates.
They're so small that you really don't notice them. That's, of course, by design.
Holmes says the company does not waste money on splashy rebranding. It has never had a layoff, he says, and employees work there on average for 14 and a half years. Most of the machinery you see at the Chelsea Milling Company is state-of-the-art. But there's also a room of old-school equipment that looks like an industrial museum. That vintage equipment still works. An old box maker shoots out Jiffy packages on an antiquated metal rack that dates from World War II. Holmes says they use it every day.
This is 1940s equipment.
Why do you keep the old machines around?
Why do we? Yeah. We still use them.
An ethos as quaint as that old-fashioned Jiffy packaging. Netta Ulaby, NPR News.
Bringing you news in a jiffy. This is NPR News.
It's 7:19. Coming up, we've got John Latimer's full phenology report. Make sure you stay tuned for Nature Conversations. That's what we want to hear from you today. What are you grateful for on this Thanksgiving week? We heard from Ian from Minneapolis, and Ian says there was all caps part of this. Oh, please, all caps, don't start with the wind chill again. Ian, you know John Latimer so well. Welcome to my world.
Good morning, Ian. Yeah, and I will try to not to dwell on the wind chill again this winter.
Lisa also texted in, said Jiffy corn muffin mix. Oh yeah, I'm somewhat thankful for that. Daniel Dix is listening in. He says, I love the album of the week. Also, I'm grateful for the singing of frogs in the spring and flaming tamarack and larch in the fall.
Ooh, yeah.
Flaming, that's a
Those
good
are nice. And speaking of singing of frogs, one of the notes that I had from today's date in, I think it was 2012, I had reports of frog singing from some friends up in Big Fork. Well, Maggie Anderson and her dad, Ed, heard wood frog, or not wood frog, leopard frog singing on today's date in 2012, I believe it was. So, yeah, you may still hear a frog or two. They haven't quite given it up, although pretty soon. I suspect that this cold weather coming in as a result of this winter storm that's passing will probably freeze a lot of lakes, and that will put a lot of the frogs kind of out of business until next spring. But when they come back, we will hear them. We receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
Winter storm watch / advisory across our region in effect until noon tomorrow. 2 to 10 inches of snow possible. Gusting winds up to 35. Slippery road conditions are expected. Today highs 33 to 37. Lows overnight 18 to 22. Getting colder as the week goes on with Wednesday night lows in the mid-teens.
I saw some further on out. I think by the time we get into December, we'll be reaching negative numbers for the first time.
Oh, wow.
-1, I think I saw. Whether we get there or not will remain to be seen, but we have had sub-20s and now sub-teens. I've had temperatures in the, I think, 9 degrees above. So I'll have to check and make sure of that. But yeah, it's winter, or it's darn close. If it isn't winter yet, you can see it from here. Local businesses can help you defend the future of KAXE and keep people-powered radio on the air with your sponsorship dollars. Visit KAXE.org/give to learn about sponsorship options. A big thank you to all of our current business sponsors. Indeed, a big thank you. Yeah. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And this time of year, you know, one of the student reports talked about the lack of color out there. And I guess color is where you find it. It's certainly not the startling colors of summer. We're definitely running down. Last week, I talked a little bit about some of the things that are still green in the forest. And of course, all of the pines and the spruce and the fir are still green. They are evergreens. So is gold thread. So are trailing arbutus. Any one of the lycopodiums, from the club mosses to the princess pine to the we have three different kinds of ground cedar, it's called. There is the northern ground cedar, there's a southern ground cedar, and then there's a blue ground cedar. And in this part of the state and in the northeastern portion of the state, all three of those occur. Now, the differences are pretty subtle and probably unimportant to most of us, but here's what I'll tell you. If you're walking through the woods and you see what looks like young cedars, maybe 3 or 4 inches tall, and they look like little cedar boughs, that is flattened needles and sort of that flat kind of horizontal sort of a structure, those almost invariably are going to be ground cedar, because if they were actually true cedars, the white cedar, they would be mowed off by the deer. Deer love cedar, and cedar do not regen very well in areas where there are deer. So if you've been out deer hunting and you're seeing cedar on the ground and it is the native white cedar, there are not very many deer in that neighborhood, because if there were, they would eat them. Now, if you come across great swaths of these young cedars that are 3 to 4 inches tall and quite thick in the on the ground, big patches of them, you're looking at a lycopodium. This is not a tree. This is a fern or a fern ally. Oftentimes, you'll see them with their strobili, their little sporophytes that stand up, that the spores come out of. And if you do see that, of course, you'll know right away that it's not a tree, that it's in the other group. It's ferns or fern allies, I guess they would be called. But at any rate, be aware that there are a lot of green things out there. Other than that, I mean, for color, yesterday I had two things that really caught my eye. One of the things I saw yesterday, and you should be able to see pretty easily when you get out into the woods, are the seed heads of the purple clematis. They look like little gray clouds. And the clematis is a vining plant, so it's going to be climbing up hazelbrush or some maybe round-leaf dogwood or something, some other shrub. The clematis is going to use it as its structure, as its basis for growing. It will vine up these woody stems. But this time of year, you get these little fluffy seed heads that pretty easily identified, and especially with the sun at low angles, you're looking at these things and they kind of almost glow sort of a grayish white in the woods. So check out the purple clematis seeds, and you might try to germinate some. You know, it wouldn't hurt if you wanted to try and grow some closer to your house. I have lots of it at my house, but I don't see it everywhere. So, and I'm in a sort of a mesic hardwood forest, and it is sand with a little bit of leaf litter on top. But they seem to do pretty well there, and you might just take some home and sprinkle those seeds around the base of some shrubs near your yard. And if you're lucky, in a year or two, you'll probably have a nice little vine there. And in the springtime, you'll see these beautiful four-petaled pale blue flowers. But this time of year, you're going to see these little clouds of gray stuck in the trees. So look for those. The other thing that caught my eye yesterday was the male flower, the male catkin, on the speckled alder. All summer long, well, for most of the summer, they have been not there at all. But then starting in about August, they became quite apparent. They were about, 3/4 of an inch long and kind of a light green. But now they are starting to take on some color. And yesterday when I looked at them, I thought that they were maroon, and my wife, who is had the 96 crayons in a box, had some other name for it. It wasn't maroon to her eye. It was a different color. And that's fine. I only had 8 crayons in my box, and I'm lucky I know what maroon is. But when I got close to these catkins, when you go in close and look carefully, you'll see that there are two distinct color dots in there. There is a red dot and there is a green dot. And they don't mix. They're not like the green is green and the red is red. But when you get really close, you'll see that they are a mixture of red and green. And when you stand back and look at them, you're gonna see something that is akin to maroon. Maybe my wife thought it was a little bit lighter than maroon, which is who knows what color. I don't know. Anyway, It's a sort of a reddish color, but highly influenced by green. And those are the catkins on the speckled alders, and well worth a look. I think, if I'm not mistaken, there are some on Season Watch that you can check out that I took pictures of that are showing that color that I'm talking about. So go to KAXE.org and go to go to Facebook and go to KAXE Season Watch. And there should be a picture on there for you to look at to get an idea of what they are. And then you can get out and check them out. The northern holly by my house still has a few berries on it. These are bright orange, but there are on a bush that probably held 100 or 150 berries. There are fewer than 10 left on the bush. And why they are left there? Was it carelessness on the part of the birds that came through to eat the others? Or was there something wrong with these that made them less than desirable? I don't know. I'm not going to try them. I ate one once, and that was enough. Not poisonous, not toxic, but certainly not tasty enough to make you want to go back and have more. They're pretty bitter. I mentioned the princess pine, the round-branched ground pine, as it's I guess the name that is given to it by botanists in the area. It's Lycopodium dendroideum. Lycopodium complanatum is the ground cedar, and I mentioned that there was northern, that's complanatum. Southern, that's digitatum, and blue, which is tristachium. All of those are lycopodiums as well, and they are all green, as well as the club mosses. There's a running club moss, a spiky club moss. There's a lot of green out there. There's a fern out there that's fairly green, and I think that it is... it's Dryopteris. I think it's the northern wood fern, but the fern frond is going to stay green all winter, and it'll be green right up into the summer or up into the spring when the snow melts. But if you look at them carefully, you'll see that none of those have spores on them. These are all the vestigial or non-reproductive branches of the Dryopteris cristata, I think it is. At any rate, there's a green fern out there that you will see if you start walking around and looking for green stuff. Lots of cottontail rabbits at my house, and they're not even waiting for dark. My dog knows that she can't catch them, so she goes out and they all run off, but she just looks at them. She doesn't bother. But believe me, there are plenty of critters out there, coyotes, foxes, owls. Everybody's going to eat rabbit. Sooner or later, the rabbit is going to fall, and it will be food for a lot of other animals. I also saw an Isabella moth caterpillar, the woolly bear caterpillar. The Isabella moth woolly bear caterpillar. That's the one, of course, that is black and reddish brown. And there's some belief that the width of the band in the middle of the caterpillar will signify the amount of winter that we're going to have. Truth is, that caterpillar has no idea what kind of a winter we're going to have. And whether it's a big caterpillar or a small one, that width or band will be commensurate. So find a little one, it'll be a short winter. Labrador tea is kind of folding up for the winter. Leatherleaf is also folding. Well, Labrador tea folds down and leatherleaf folds up. Both are quite reddish looking right now, and if you're looking at swamps and bogs as you drive along this morning, all of those red looking plants out there are either Labrador tea or leather leaf, and they're just preparing for winter. They're going to be, you know, closing up and shutting down and hanging in for what comes next. I've got a couple of notes that I wanted to cover. First of all, last year on today's date, we had 1.5 inches of snow. And last year on today's date was the first time that I recorded a temperature below 20 degrees. 2 years ago, on the 25th of November in 2023, I went skating for the first time on Crooked Lake. In 2017, I had a note about autumn willow seeds and talked to John Zazada. And John mentioned that willow seeds photosynthesize. And those seeds that fall off of the willows in the spring, the common willows, the other willows, not the autumn willow, but those seeds begin to germinate almost immediately. The autumn willow seeds that you are likely to see right now, if you're driving along and you're looking out at a patch of willows, if you see one that is covered with these big fuzzy buds, that's the autumn willow, and those seeds will delay germination until next spring. And they are one of the few willows that does. In 2015, McKinney Lake had ice along the edges. In 2014, Pacagama Lake was frozen over, and that would be early for Pacagama. In 2013, I had a report of a loon on today's date, still in the area. In 2009, Crooked Lake was still open, and I saw my last active spider. Who knows? I mean, there are spiders that survive the winter and walk around on the snow, but that was the last spider of 2009. In 2003, Wabana Lake froze over, and that's 10 days earlier than average. And in 1989, I saw my last great blue heron in the area. And there's probably a few around right now, and maybe you're lucky enough to have seen them. I'm going to close today with a little bit of a fill-in on some interesting study that had been done on downy woodpeckers. They equipped these woodpeckers with some sophisticated measuring devices to find out just whatever they could about how the woodpecker works. And they found that the woodpecker can bring 20 to 30 times its body weight in force when it pecks, when it drives its beak into the wood. And the downy, which is a fairly small bird, is really, well, I would assume that all woodpeckers probably have many of these same treats, developed many of these same habits. But the people that did the research on these animals were able to find out that the head and neck begin the process. They sort of bring the head and neck back, and then as the head and neck come forward, the effort shifts from the head and neck area of the bird to the hip flexor and then to the tail. And the interesting thing is that this can happen 13 times a second. The downy can rap out 13 strikes in 1 second. And each time it does that, those muscles go through this particular sequence of events flawlessly. They never, or at least when the scientists were examining them, they never lost track of which muscle to activate when. So it's head and neck, hip flexor, tail, head and neck, hip flexor, tail. And they did it perfectly up to 13 times a second. And what they also discovered is that when the woodpecker is slamming its head into the tree, it grunts, it exhales. So it, all these muscles are in concert, and then it exhales at the same time and sort of tightens itself up through the abdominal core. And it can do that. It exhales every time it strikes, and at 13 times a second, it is exhaling and inhaling 13 times a second. Just amazing that they can do that. And what else did they say about it? It was just really fascinating. The idea that they grunt as they smack that tree is just about too much for me to carry on. The reason woodpeckers don't get concussions, their brains are really too small and lack the mass necessary to slam around inside their head, so they don't have a problem with concussions. And of course, you probably have heard me say the tongue wraps around the back of the head, comes from the back of the neck, comes up over the ear, past and over the eye, and then out through the beak. And the tongue has a barb on the end, and the tongue can stick out sometimes 2 to 3 times the size of the bird's beak. So it can really thrust its beak out there if it needs to. And it's barbed at the end, and so if you're a worm trying to escape down a hole and the woodpecker is behind you and throws that tongue at you, it's like getting speared. You're not getting off once you're hooked onto that tongue, and you're going to be dinner for the little downy woodpecker. So nature is amazing, and I am just grateful that I am able to take it all in and understand some of it and share it with you. That's our phenology show for this week. By all means, if you have observations or conversations you'd like to have with us, please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you.
It is 7:42. Coming up, we've got Best Wishes, and then we'll bring you more nature reports from students from around the state of Minnesota. We've been hearing from some folks this morning. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Ian, who did not want you to bring up the wind chill yet, said, "Happy Thanksgiving to you all. Grateful for you and the joy you bring." Thank you, Ian. We sure appreciate that. We're asking for you to text in as well. What are you grateful for in nature? Text 218-326-1234.
Support comes from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gigs and GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
Looking at the weather, I just saw a post from Tornado Bob. He's going to be joining us in our next hour to talk about what he's thinking with this winter storm watch and advisory. He doesn't think we'll get very much in the Grand Rapids area, but National Weather Service still reporting that they are seeing anywhere from, they're putting 5 to 8 inches in the region. He said it is clocking more south now. But it is a storm watch that is in effect until tomorrow at noon. Winds are going to gust up to 35 miles an hour, and colder temperatures are going to move in by Wednesday. Today, looking at 33 to 37 degrees overnight, 18 to 22.
Support comes from the Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience, located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
We'd also like to thank the Minnesota Humanities Center. They distribute more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. The funding is available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach Minnesota's diverse arts, culture, and heritage, including Indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, and recent immigrants and veterans. Details at mnhum.org/grants. All right, here we go for our... for best wishes, we just got a text in from someone at 218-326-1234. We mentioned some specials going on Thanksgiving, and they're asking about the blues, full-time blues radio. We have a special going on 10 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day, Thanksgiving Blues, songs about food, family, and gratitude from new and independent blues musicians. Thanks for texting in this morning.
Yeah. You can check out KAXE.org for more phenology or sign up for the Season Watch newsletter written by our phenology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell. It's time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. For today, November 25th, Nita Locken is having her 72nd birthday in Warba. Darren Miller is celebrating a 60th birthday in Bemidji. And Allison Edgerton is 78 today. Happy birthday, Allison, who resides in Bacchus.
There from Krungbin, the song called Balls and Pins 2, a re-recorded album and reimagined versions of their debut album that was out in 2015. You can hear new music coming up at 9 o'clock. Malachi Coons is going to be your host. And also today on Headwaters, a conversation with Dave Simonette of Trampled by Turtles, who's in performance, solo performance this Saturday at the Rife Center in Grand Rapids.
He had an opinion published in the Duluth paper or Minneapolis paper yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Very well written, very interesting point of view about the nature of wild things. We received support from Lake Tax Advisors, where Ron Berg and his staff offer tax, accounting, and payroll services for Minnesota businesses with locations in Grand Rapids and Rush City. More information at lakes.tax. And we received support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more. Empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
We just got a text in from Mickey. She said, good morning. This isn't nature related, but it is gratitude related. I received this recipe many years ago at a cookie exchange hosted by KEXC. I've made it many times. It's a family favorite. I appreciate how KEXC creates a welcoming atmosphere and brings the community together. Mickey, I think that's the first time we met in person. And I don't know if we haven't done a cookie swap in a long time, but yes, I agree. You know, it's those little things sometimes that you pick up someone's recipe or something like that, an event you didn't expect you were going to meet people at, all those kinds of things. So text in gratitude this morning. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
It's time to continue with some of our student phenology replies, talkbacks. Funding for Phenology Talkbacks is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology Talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. Our next report comes from Lee Jackson and Darcy Rolfe's classes at North Shore Community School near Duluth.
Hello from North Shore Community School on the north shore of Lake Superior. My name is Will and I'm your phenologist for this week. On Monday, November 17th, during morning meeting, Ms. Jackson's class saw a slight layer of frost on the ground, and students could see their breath. On Tuesday, November 18th, Ms. Jackson's class noticed that Schmidt Creek was frozen over. There was about 1 inch of ice that covered the creek. A 90-pound sixth grader was able to stand on the ice. However, once students stomped on the ice cracked. Also, Vivian reported that 40% of Island Lake, near where she lives, is frozen. On Wednesday, November 18th, Ms. Jackson's class noticed that the broken ice on the creek started to refreeze. On Tuesday, November 18th, Ms. Jackson's class noticed that 99.9% of the leaves on trees on the school nature trail have fallen. Only a few brown leaves remain hanging on the trees. On Sunday, November 16th, Segovia noticed several chickadees busy feeding at her bird feeder. On Monday, November 17th, Ms. Felton's class heard a hairy woodpecker drumming in the school forest. Usually woodpeckers drum in the spring, so this was a bit unusual. On Tuesday, November 18th, Julia noticed an owl sitting on a branch outside her house in the dark. On Monday, November 17th, Azalea noticed a deer eating a pumpkin left over from Halloween at her house. Roz and Ilya saw a squirrel trying to defend its food from birds so it could have the save the acorns for winter on November 18th. For Miss Rolfe had 4 deer in her backyard on Thursday the 20th. She could tell that their coats of hair had changed for the season as they are now thicker grayish brown coat compared to their reddish brown coat they have in the summer. Ilya and Roz saw an aquatic insect trying to get out from under the ice on the creek on Tuesday the 18th. Also on Tuesday, November 18th, I noticed a minnow swimming under the ice on Schmidt Creek. On Thursday, November 20th, Miss Cassidy's class found a turquoise elf cup fungus. These type of fungi are the cause of blue-stained wood chips in the forest, but it's not often that we see one with the mushroom cups visible. This concludes the phenology report. Have a great week and be observant.
Thank you, Will. Nice report. That group always has good reports. They definitely get out and see the world there at their school, which is really quite exciting. some ice in the area on the creeks and on the lakes. Also, Looks like most of the leaves are down. When you say 99.9%, that's just about all of them. Those that remain are, I don't know, maybe they just didn't get the message, or maybe they just don't want to let go. I guess there's always that group. Hairy woodpeckers drumming. It is a bit unusual for them to drum this time of year. That is, as they noted, typically a behavior of the spring, although it can start in December, and it's territorial. They're trying to establish a, you know, they're, this is going to be my area, don't come in here. So I'm not surprised that they may have heard a few of those. Deer eating pumpkins, yeah, they do that, and they like them. They'll come into my yard and kick apart the pumpkins and eat them as well. And definitely can see that they're wearing their winter coats. And looking through the ice, you just never know what you're going to see. Insects, minnows, they had a good time doing that. And then the turquoise elf cut fungus. Pretty interesting. And the fact that they were able to see them, to see the mushrooms, is really impressive, because I've seen a lot of the blue stain, but not very often do I see the mushrooms. Our next report comes from New Century Academy's trip to Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Trinity,
Samara,
and Lucy from New Century Academy in Hutchinson. During our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on November 19th through the 21st, the high temperature was 42 degrees Fahrenheit with a low of 22. When we arrived, the lake was completely frozen. Through the ice at the shore, we saw two frogs, a big one and a little one, sitting motionless in about 2 inches of water. They appeared to be frozen, but not dead. We can't figure this one out, though, John. Any theories? By the way, we named the frogs Tom and Jerry.
During wolf pet class, we howled like wolves, and to our surprise, heard coyotes howl in response. Other observations include a bald eagle sitting on the ice, a muskrat swimming near the shore, and a total of 10 deer. Surprisingly, a few ladybugs were spotted on trees.
During our trip to the secret bog, we found a nursery web spider, clumps of club moss on a game trail, and noted that wild strawberry leaves are still bright green, but some are starting to change colors. We had a great time exploring nature, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside,
and live connected.
That was a pretty interesting report. Thank you very much for that, Trinity, Samara, and Lucy. The lake was completely frozen through the ice. They saw two frogs, one big one and one little one, about 2 inches of water. They appeared to be frozen but not dead. Frogs, they react to the temperature, and as it cools off, they sort of slow down. Their metabolism slows. They don't do any feeding during the winter. They simply fall into the bottom of the lake, nestle into the mud a little bit, and just take in oxygen through their skin so that they can stay alive. I would suspect that these frogs maybe were, you know, thinking maybe there's a little open water here near the edge, but it's also come to my attention that the frogs were no longer along the shore, and they probably were moving to a little bit deeper water in order to spend the winter kind of taking a nap there in the mud that will keep them alive and well until spring. And then they'll emerge and start singing again. We'll hear them, if those were leopard frogs, we'll probably hear them around the end of April, 1st of May. One hopes for earlier rather than later.
And do you see we had a little update? Did you mention that?
Yeah, I mentioned that the frogs were no longer in that spot and probably had moved to a more suitable location. Or as Dave says, perhaps moved on to the afterlife. You know, frogs they're susceptible. And fish will actually come along and kind of nose them out of the mud and eat them. I remember a report from some folks.